back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in this week for Steph while she's away on vacation. She will be back on Monday with the move.
I was just saying, I'm really kind of confused by your chat group because everyone can spell in it, and I don't know how to handle that.
That's true. When they misspell something, they're being ironic.
Exactly.
That's the funny thing.
I can tell they're attractive by their font. It's really nice.
Right. So we've got a lot to talk about, no doubt. At 10:30, it looks like they're going to make the Obama administration is going to make an announcement of some sort, either you know, through Gibbs or through a major announcement about the Russia-U.S.
appeasement.
Yes,
we're giving in to the freedom haters.
It's true, by not having enough bombs to blow up the Earth.
We will no longer have enough bombs to blow up the Earth 26 times.
No.
We'll be able to blow it up maybe seven.
Seven,
and
right.
It's a disgrace to manhood.
It is, absolutely.
It's horrific.
We're pulling out, and it's sad.
Yeah, Bush wouldn't have done this.
No.
Bush would have made us able to blow up the Earth 36 times.
Right. And you know what the funny thing I think about this part of it is that this really isn't about missiles, quite frankly, because like you said, we have enough to enact so many nuclear holocausts over, like, we could.
And ours are bigger than theirs, too. We should stress that. Bigger and thicker,
right,
our missiles
that's
are.
That's a very important distinction. But you could literally, we have enough nuclear bombs where we could blow up the Earth. The mutants that would be created out of the sea would come up out of the sea, and their civilization would be destroyed.
Yes, the dolphin men wouldn't survive either. So that's pretty good.
Right. So, but what this is really about is maintenance. Because nuclear weapons are crappy, hard to maintain.
Mm-hmm.
They have to be changed over constantly.
Mm-hmm.
They have to be watched by a crew of 75 people minimum.
And who's paying for that, Hal?
Us.
Yes.
I think I'm fairly certain. Well, the Chinese threw us.
Well, yeah. I mean,
but
we're
still,
borrowing from them.
Yeah, we're borrowing from them to do that.
And this will be less loose nukes for the Russians to have odd generals sell to angry Muslims.
Right, for a box of caviar. And,
exactly.
And some vodka. Yes.
So this is a good thing we're doing, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Rumor has it.
Yeah. It's almost impossible to imagine anyone protesting something like this.
Oh, and they will. That's, you know, that one of the problems.
No.
That they, yes, one of the problems they've had, you know, they're stressing is that, you know, treaties have to be ratified, and they think that they're legitimately going to be blocked by the Republicans going forward.
How long until a teabagger calls Obama an appeaser for doing this?
Yeah.
How
right.
often people who know nothing about World War II will
right.
wait to use that word again?
Right, because we don't want enough nuclear bombs with, you know, where we can only afford three guys to watch the thing, and,
mm-hmm.
and they all think it's time to take break, and then suddenly there's a suitcase roaming around the docks someplace around Miami. You know?
Yeah.
So the elimination of that as a potentiality has been what's commonly referred to in sensible circles as a priority for the Obama administration.
Ah, wear a skirt. What good is being a man if you can only blow up the Earth six more times?
That's true.
Disgrace.
So we will probably end up going to that at about 10:30 Eastern time, to Lord willing. And
we want to see what Gibbs is wearing, too.
That's true.
Yes.
It's true. Because going into the NCAA championships, that seems to be the only talk of any merit. And, you know, it's amazing to me that literally that was 80% of Morning Joe this morning.
Oh, I know.
The other 20%, of course, was campaign speeches done by Joe Scarborough.
Yes.
To convince me that the Republicans have been doing a great thing and that they need to be rewarded.
Well, at this point, Joe's the only credible opposition Obama has.
Right.
I mean, who else is going
to
run?
And he's not credible opposition to Mika Brzezinski, so let's not fool ourselves. I mean, this is a guy who aligns himself with Pat Buchanan, who wrote a paper last year saying that, you know, Hitler didn't want to invade Poland.
Oh, he didn't want to.
Europe made him.
Those liberals forced him to invade Poland.
Right. It was a progressive, you know, as Glenn Beck would say, it's a progressive push.
Yeah. And how did they thank him for doing what they wanted? They went to war with him to drive him out.
So rude.
Fickle French people,
yes,
man.
Yes, exactly. And then Pat Buchanan went and saw Inglourious Basterds and had no idea it ended that way. He was very upset.
Well, it's funny because, you know, Pat Buchanan did write a book called A Republic, Not an Empire,
right,
in which he really laid out, you know, that a real conservative would be opposed to all these unnecessary wars we're having overseas to colonize these
mm-hmm.
brown people and their oil that needs us. And that's why I still say that MSNBC has more actual conservatives working for them than Fox.
Yes.
Fox has neocons.
Right.
MS has Joe and Pat.
Right.
And they're more real conservatives than just about anyone on Fox, with the possible exception of O'Reilly.
Yeah, no question.
Yeah.
I mean, I think at this point, and there's a conversation going. You know, I've said this all week, and I think it bears repeating, is that you can actually have an entirely conservative to liberal, progressive to neocon.
The whole schmear.
In the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
Within the context of elect nothing but Democrats, you'll still have the entire spectrum of what used to be government.
Yes, but guys in the Republican Party have more Tom Clancy books in hardcover.
That's
so there's
true.
That.
That's true. So we are going to, by the way, since the new poll numbers, depending on which ones you look at and the wording of them, which is pretty fascinating. Right now, Obama's in a dead heat with random GOP guy, according to Joe Scarborough's Gallup poll of choice this morning. Meanwhile, Daily Kos's post, which comes, I think, from Rasmussen, has Obama ticking up 4 points in the last few days and his unfavorable rating going down 3.
Yeah.
So the gap is widening, and this is freaking them out. That's why you're going to see a full court press about the foregone conclusion of a Republican sweep in the fall.
A lot of us are shocked because Democrats did something this week. And so a lot of progressives are having a hard time wrapping their heads around this.
They didn't just do something. They did a lot of somethings this week.
They did a lot of somethings.
Yeah. Let's just start with health care. And then let's go with the fact that they were trying to attach the removal of the bank middlemen from the student loan program.
How dare they?
Yes.
Haven't the banks had it hard enough for the last 10 years?
It's brutal that now they get to stop skimming 7% off the top, driving people, for years, like jacking up their rates to 19%. When they've never had to guarantee the loan in the first place. One of the reasons why you pay interest or why you can get interest from somebody else is going, look, dude, it's my money, and you're borrowing it for a while. This is a time I don't have my money. I can't spend it on anything else, so you need to pay me a little bit to make it worth my while. That I can buy. I understand it's still usury. It's still the Bible hates it, and so does the Quran, but we'll go.
Since when do we follow those books?
Yeah, exactly. So we'll sidestep that entirely, I think. But now, they literally, I want to look for this quote from Lamar Alexander, which is the stunning thing.
I have never heard anyone say before.
It's stunning. Basically, he makes the case. He was going, basically, they're looking for another Washington takeover. So they decided to take over the federal student loan program. I mean, that's the quote. That's Lamar Alexander of Tennessee.
Oh, and they treat Social Security like it's a government program. It's disgraceful.
Right. Get your hands off your government hands off my Medicare. It's more of that. I mean, that was stunning. When I heard Lamar Alexander say that, it was just like, you just said you want the federal government out of the federal student loan program.
Yeah, it's delightful, isn't it?
I mean, I can almost understand, like, Medicare doesn't have the word federal attached to it right away. You can almost be, if you're a complete idiot, forgiven for going, oh, right, Medicare, right, okay. Because Medicare Advantage was that crappy thing the Republicans set up to that the pharmaceutical companies and the medical lobby said, let us do it for a profit and we'll do it a lot better. And it's been a bad part of it. And that's where all these quote-unquote cuts in Medicare that you're seeing.
Well, and that's the one thing Bush failed at. I got to give Bush credit. Everything that guy tried to do when he came into office, he pretty much pulled off except turning Medicare over to the private sector and essentially taking your Medicare fund and bringing it to Vegas and making it a big scratch-off game. Except for privatizing Social Security and Medicare, Bush pulled off everything. So he was very successful at what he wanted to do.
No, there's no question. I mean,
it all failed, but he succeeded in getting it back.
And getting what he wanted. Yeah, well, that's the thing. He's always succeeded in getting what he wanted. It's just none of it actually worked out for us. I mean, and you look at what those things are. Let's take a look back. The big accomplishments of the Bush era.
What hath compassionate conservatism wrought?
No
Child Left Behind. That was right, except they didn't fund it.
It was an unfunded mandate. Yeah, remember those things?
But it was a great idea. Yeah, it passed. That's what matters.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
The Iraq and the Afghanistan wars.
It worked out great, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Economy soaring.
Yeah,
totally. The oil paid for everything, like Wolfowitz promised.
Exactly. And then, of course, what was that thing? Oh, the Patriot Act. Right.
Well,
the biggest stripping of personal freedoms that has happened in this country since before we actually had them.
Yeah, but at least it wasn't rammed through Congress before everyone could read it, Al. Keep that in mind, okay?
Right, healthcare bill, which was posted online for 72 hours, and all of it went through committee.
Yes.
This is the other thing that drives me crazy about this whole process. Was they're like, nobody's had a chance to read this thing?
No one's had it. It's 2,000 pages long.
No question that we broke it up into 100 pages each, marked it up in committee, and 20 of us sat around going through it with our staff to bring up notes and question
people.
It's
only been online for 3 months. It's a disgrace.
Every chunk of it has been broken down and read umpteen times. I mean,
and we know that now because of all the minutiae they're trying to insert into it, which is hilarious. It's like, oh, you did read it, didn't
you? Exactly.
You
know exactly where the holes are. Now you're reading it because you're trying to stop it. That's the funny part, too.
Ye lying bags of douche.
Right, exactly. We have I think we have music along those lines that I will find.
You're a lying sack of
crap. That's right.
You're a lying sack of crap.
Your lies keep keep in mind the Patriot Act.
And they're not alone in that, by the way. But yes,
we had one serious politician in this country about Wall Street corruption. Mm-hmm. He had a little problem on the side with hookers, and they used the Patriot Act to take him out. That's
right.
The great thing about the Spitzer story. Not so much the horrendous personal behavior on his part, although after Tiger Woods and Jesse James, he does kind of seem like Paul and Linda McCartney in terms of devotion.
Oh, it's absurd, yeah.
But they went after Spitzer because he was taking on the Wall Street crooks. Bush sent them, and they used the Patriot Act to get him. And just like Clinton, they went looking for financial malfeasance, and instead they settled on sex.
Right.
And it stuck.
Well, because that's really all they have. And and again, they only really win on social issues, like kind of the ick factor. Literally, I don't think they're governing anymore. I think they're on a reality show. I think the Republican Party is actually in its own version of sort of somewhere between, like, The Biggest Loser and and Jersey Shore. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of an, oh, my God, could these people be this stupid and ineffective,
yes,
and actually still be alive and able to feed themselves.
Well, it's funny you say that because Boehner's been offered to join the cast of Jersey Shore based on his tan alone.
Right.
But I actually think it's not even as sophisticated as a reality show. I think the modern GOP is sort of like a mob restaurant, and they're just burning it down for the insurance money at this point.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, David Frum told the truth this week and paid the price,
and
but he said, Fox News used to work for us. Now we as Republicans are working for Fox News.
No question. We're lucky enough to have the lovely and talented John Fugelsang in studio on my final day of the week of Hump Days with Hal. We're going to take a break right now. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. We are live streaming at livestream.com/HalSparks or halsparks.com/livestream, whatever your poison is, at Hal Sparks and, of course, at John Fugelsang on the Twit. And, yes, and we will be back right after this.
Who are those freaks?
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in this week for Steph while she's away on vacation. She will be back on Monday with the Mooks. They've been, lounging somewhere on a beach or in some sort of a spa situation. Probably, I think, I'm fairly certain that Steph, when she goes on her vacations, is just she goes straight to a spa. They lower her into a vat of goo, not dissimilar from what Luke Skywalker was floating in after his injuries on Hoth.
Yes.
And she just stays kind of in this,
She's in the hyperbaric chamber with 2-1-B medical droid.
Exactly,
outside,
right.
Sure,
and yes,
okay.
and they're injecting her with B vitamins and, and anti-stress, hormones.
Yeah, she gets her shots. And it's been great having you here, though, because it's been wonderful listening to the show and also just to be in the studio without the shirtless men fanning you the
That's
whole
true.
Time.
That's true.
And it's nice to walk through here without walking over Whippet containers on the floor.
That's
so
true.
I'll miss you, Hal.
Yeah, I know. I understand. Right. So we were talking before the break. It's hard to start to boil it down in this conversation. Obviously, if you listen to, Joe Scarborough, or Pat Buchanan or any of the kind of Republicans, this fall is going to be a landslide.
Oh, they're going to roll around in it. They're going to take back what is rightfully theirs.
Yeah, they're going to give America back to the people it really belongs to.
Republicans haven't been this angry since Al Gore tried to steal the election.
Right. So here's I thought I would just go over a list of things that Obama has accomplished in his do-nothing first 16 months.
All this dithering? Sure.
Healthcare, yes. Healthcare passed. In just this week, U.S.-Russia on the verge of a nuclear arms reduction treaty. We will see that actually today.
Tragedy.
Horrifying. First Hispanic on the Supreme Court of the United States.
I feel better knowing we have a Supreme Court justice who's been on the sixth train. Like, that makes me feel safe.
That's true. She's still Jenny from the block, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, she is.
Yeah.
She's selling you from the block.
Student loan reformation, which also passed last night, which means that the government has now removed the bank middlemen from the student loan project, so we're not paying this skimmed off 6% to people who were never on the hook for these loans in the first place. The government backs all these loans. Mm-hmm. They are all backed by your tax dollars, but there's banks in the middle skimming 6% off, which is insanity. And just kind of, it's all profit. There's no risk at all.
None for them.
So that's gone.
And that's really disturbing because the banks have had it really tough for a long time in this country.
I feel very
bad. I don't know why Obama's
got
it in for profit.
I don't either. Continued drawdown of forces in Iraq. We're at the lowest point so far. We're looking at 50,000 by August. According to all the military leaders, we're on trajectory for that, which is kind of an amazing thing. Worldwide captures of al-Qaeda leaders. Orders to suspend or reduce mortgage payments for the unemployed. This is new this week.
Mm-hmm. The freeloaders.
Yes, exactly. And capping your mortgage payment when you're underwater, when your house is worth less than it, you know, that's actually going for, at 33% of your income, which is kind of amazing. Don't ask, don't tell rules made stricter this week so that they don't, you can't just willy-nilly make a random phone call.
Yes.
Just pretty.
But,
I mean,
but if still, if you're gay, you're out.
That's true. Yeah. However,
it's harder to lie about it.
Yes, you have to actually go under oath to make an accusation.
No more anonymous.
Before, it was just kind of like, I think he's queer, click, you know, and that was it.
No more anonymous outings.
Right.
Which is sad because a lot of guys I know like anonymous outings, but, you know, it's hotter when you don't know the
true.
Guy.
That's true, absolutely. Well, you know, you live near Central Park.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the ramble.
Exactly. And the next
it's our culture, as George Michael would say.
Totally, yeah, not one to pass up a free lunch, as you would say. And so... What what have we got from the right wing in the last year? What have we actually gotten from them besides a barrage of no's? We've got John Patrick Bedell, Joseph Stack, Scott Roeder, James Von Brunn. We've got basically idiots wagging guns around driven crazy by Glenn Beck.
Yes.
But they are
fighting for tort reform.
That's true.
Because once there's no more malpractice insurance, doctors will lower their rates, folks. Did you know that? It's a beautiful reality we have now in the country. Tort reform is all you're going to hear from the right wing on health care, and they just don't want to have malpractice insurance for doctors.
No.
But they're implying that rates will go down.
Right.
Which is kind of funny.
Yeah, it's kind of, what's the word for it? An absurdity.
Please allow doctors to charge less. That's all we want.
Yeah, yeah.
We're Republicans.
That's these people are seriously drunk. So, and I want to play this clip from Glenn Beck. Apparently, all this violence, the throwing of the bricks through windows, the death threats, all that stuff, that's not the teabaggers' fault. That's not because they're unhinged and capable of genuine debate.
It's they're
not
the victims,
because
they're, right?
Yeah. It's because the government is poking them.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to this. This is Glenn Beck.
Well, they're the man. They're the voice of reason now. Meanwhile, in just today's news, Cokie Roberts said, I was a terrorist. The director of the Titanic, I don't know if you saw it on the front page of the Drudge Report, said I was, and excuse this, an effing a-hole and a poison to society. I'm going to get to those later, but I want you to know that's not just about me. That's not about me.
No.
You see, what they've done is they've radicalized the man. These people are in the center, but who's down here?
Yeah.
They know that these people always lose. Because they experienced it.
What?
The crazy teabaggers in the streets.
Yeah. We got to take a break.
Why
hold this, because I want to play the rest of this after we get back from this. I want to get this poker. I'm Hal Sparks filling in for Stephanie Miller while she's joining. I mean, it drives me insane what this man is capable of saying and how little sense it actually makes. I'm in studio with John Fugelsang. Lucky enough to have Fridays with Fugelsang. Hal Sparks filling in for Stephanie Miller. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks in studio right now with John Fugelsang for Fridays with Fugelsang.
All hail Hal.
Yes. Oh, sweet. Not necessary.
Stephanie makes me say that to her.
Does she?
During the commercial breaks.
Really?
Yeah, so I didn't know if it applied.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
Okay.
I've got a sound ego that requires inflation whatsoever.
Well, what's that like?
It makes you awkward at Hollywood parties.
Yes. Oh, okay. Maybe I have a sound ego,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. And once the drinking starts, no one understands you at all.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
yeah.
I don't get it. You seem to be comfortable. How are you not imbibing?
Yes.
So that's another topic for another day. I want to finish this Glenn Beck clip.
Please
before we go
do.
To some calls. This is Glenn Beck. Roll it back a little bit there, Tony, if you can, from the tail end of that. This is him basically blaming the government for the people that are throwing stuff at it, not because of the Patriot Act or something like that, not because they were doing wars of choice
not
in other countries.
We bankrupted the Treasury and
went from a gold standard back during the Nixon era, and not that kind of stuff.
Because no conservative president's balanced a budget since Nixon.
No, not because of that. But because we try to give health care to 30 million people who are just freeloaders.
Oh,
so here's
what would Jesus say?
It's not about me. You see, what they've done is they've radicalized the man.
Mm.
These people are in the center, but who's down here?
Yeah, I think he's pointing at his pants.
They know that these people always lose.
Okay, Glenn,
because
we're on camera
they experienced
now.
It.
Yeah. Glenn, we're not
crazy teabaggers in the streets.
Glenn, we're not picking this up, please.
Why would a government continue to poke you and poke you and poke you and poke you? Why
like Rahm Emanuel in a shower.
Things? Why have these people said these things about good Americans?
Why? Well, they haven't said them about good Americans. They've said them about you, Glenn. Glenn is a, and I was saying this before, Glenn is a terrible American. And yeah. I don't mean he's as a human being like he's, I think he's bad at being an American.
Yeah,
in the way
according
that some
to
people
what the dictionary
skate.
Says, yeah.
Right, like, you know, some people are bad roller skaters.
Yes.
He is ineffective as an American. He is, like, he doesn't understand the system.
He's great at feudalism. Fantastic
Absolutely.
Feudalist. I mean,
no
my
question.
God, the serfs love him.
You know, as a monarchical court jester, I'm with you.
Yeah.
I totally see that.
Empire wet nurse, fantastic.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Making that, you know, it's kind of serving up, like, if he was, I don't know, serving, say, the Burmese hunters or something like that, I'd almost, like, I'd go, okay,
well
get,
done.
Yeah.
Pat
you're great at that.
Have some Pepsi.
You're terrible at being an American.
Not good.
Because the melting pot makes you gag. I mean, literally, that brings up his gag reflex. The idea that, you know, that, and by the way, I've never thought that America's a melting pot. I think we're like a salad. I think we still retain our whole parts. We just mix, and the dressing is our kind of
general. I think we're kind of a smoothie. We've been violently blended together.
Right.
But we taste good.
We do. We're fantastic. The rest of the world still likes us.
Mm-hmm.
Just go on the subways here in New York City, and you'll see that the place is just overrun with Europeans going, wow, my dollar goes so far here.
These days, yeah.
Yeah. I remember when they were going to wipe out, they were going to put Reagan. They wanted to put Reagan on the $5 bill. Remember that? They
the 50?
Was it the 50?
The 50 as of now. It was the dime a few years ago.
Yes.
And then Nancy Reagan herself put the kibosh on that because Ronnie supported FDR. Now they want to put him on the $50 bill and replace Grant because what did he ever do?
Yeah, what have you done for me lately? But, I, you know, I've always said that they should put him on a dollar coin that's worth 35 cents.
Brilliant.
Thank you.
Or just put him on a government credit card.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
You don't have to pay.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Better yet, put Reagan on top of Grant's face on the 50 and let him gradually trickle down over decades.
Right, exactly.
I'm sure it'll work.
Right. Standing on the working class. Like just a bunch of people crumpled down near the base of it. Okay. So I want to take some calls because there's some people, not the least of which is Mandarin in New York, who is actually with us in the chat room as well at livestream.com/Al Sparks. How do you like that? This is a multimedia call.
Very impressed.
I'm,
hiya.
Hi. How are you?
We're spectacular. Thank you.
I want to give a shout out to, because you can't use caps, I want to give a shout in to everybody in the chat room.
Yeah.
Hi.
It's a bright place to hang out.
So yeah, latte, and Enzo, and everybody. Hi. So I have a question, and I think if this is true, this might explain something.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the wealthy that's going to be taxed more to pay for this health bill that just passed?
Yes and no, and I'll explain that. And John and I will kind of split the argument for you. And thank you for the call, and we'll watch for you in the chat room, Mandarin. The issue is that yes, indeed. If you make over $250,000 a year, your taxes are going to go up slightly. If you make over $1 million a year, you might pay up to, this is the number, $49,000 more in taxes. Okay. Which, as a percentage of your overall income, is still way less than somebody who makes $30,000 a year.
So you're saying they're going to tax the rich a little bit more like Clinton did and left us with a record surplus?
Yes.
Socialism,
I know,
horror.
Horrible. And quite frankly, when you have you make $30,000 a year and somebody takes 15% of what you got, that's a big difference in your life.
Well, that's why Steve Forbes loves the flat tax.
Exactly.
Right?
And when you make $1 million a year plus and somebody takes 3% of what you make, because most of the time you're incorporated anyways and your taxes you never have to show a profit.
Don't tell them. Don't
I know,
them.
But that's how it works.
Don't tell the bottom 95%.
Exactly, that the rich pay next to nothing in taxes, and that most of the people that you look at on if nobody knew who Donald Trump was and he walked into a car dealership and they looked at his bottom line for real as a human being, he wouldn't be able to buy a car. Just be very clear about that. He might have credit where he can buy gigantic buildings and start construction projects, but on an individual level, they hide most of his income in so many ways that as a human being probably attached to his Social Security number, he probably makes 20 grand a year. The funny thing is he'll start getting forms to make him available to the subsidies in the new health care bill. Like, that's the stunning part. I mean, the dodge is incredible. And the loopholes have been there for quite some time. And most of, like I said, most of it filters through a corporation anyways.
Well, and if we want to get serious about solving our economic problems, we could go back to an Eisenhower-era tax rate when the rich were gouged with taxes.
Yes.
You talk about the good old
days,
folks.
We're not even close to that.
You talk about the 50s were the good old days. I'll tell you why. American, I won't call it socialism, I'll call it economic justice. We had the rich who were taxed fiercely after World War II, which led to an era of prosperity for everyone that lasted decades. And you had that socialist GI Bill that saved the lives and careers of so many soldiers coming home and allowed them to go to school and buy a home and start businesses.
And basically created the middle class out of nothing. And now the Republicans are fighting. We're fighting that tooth and nail.
Absolutely. They're trying to undo everything that Democrats did to save us before, during, and after World War II.
Right, because a middle class is dangerous to a ruling class. They just are. They're the ones nipping at your heels. They're more entrepreneurial. They're smarter. They work harder. They've got an ethic. They're not poisoned by the idea that, you know, the born wealth idea where, you know, you've got a bunch of rich children who have never had to work a day in their life suddenly running their dad's companies into the ground. The middle class worked for a living and got what they got, right?
And that's why it's so important we make sure the middle class hates Acorn, Hal.
That's true.
Rich people pay Fox people
which
to make middle class people
anymore,
blame poor people.
Which Acorn does not exist anymore. They actually have shuttered their doors there, which is, by the way, an image makeover.
Mm-hmm.
Remember what happened to Blackwater went away as well. But Acorn no longer exists. But that didn't stop Vitter from actually putting a bill forth to defund Acorn as part of the attempt to stop health care, reconciliation package. That was one of the things. I want to go to Barb in Chicago, Illinois, because she has an interesting point that you and I were talking about during the break. Barb, are you there?
Yes, good morning. I called Eric Cantor's office this morning and talked to Max. And I mentioned that Mr. Cantor had lied about the bullet going through his office window. And
right.
He called me, Max called me a liar. And I said, no, I've heard it on the radio. The Richmond police said that it went through an office in the same building that Mr. Cantor is.
Right.
And he says, no, he has the police report and that I'm lying. And I said, well, I think Mr. Cantor is lying and he should apologize to the American people because he's fanning trouble.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Barb. I wanted to reference that because, and thank you for the call. From NBC's Mark Murray and Pete Williams, House Minority Whip told reporters that a bullet was shot through my campaign office in Richmond this week. That was his direct quote.
Mm-hmm.
A bullet was shot through my office.
Through? The word through, he
through
said?
Through my campaign office.
Sounds
in
pretty
Richmond.
Serious.
Yeah. A bullet was shot through my campaign office in Richmond this week. Not just the window.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Richmond Police Department just released a statement on the shooting. The skinny, per preliminary investigation, gun was fired into the air. Bullet struck the window in a down direction.
Mm-hmm.
It broke a window pane, but did not cause any additional damage, including
I believe it cracked a window pane. It didn't actually pierce it, right?
It's true. It went through, but it didn't actually hit the blinds. It went through so softly. There is no way physically you can fire a shot towards a window and have it go through the window but not affect the curtains behind it, literally the Venetian blinds. Now, that's the other.
Well, that proves that MoveOn.org is as dangerous as teabaggers.
Clearly.
Yes.
Clearly. Here's the other thing. I love how they assume, even though there's no suspects, that this was a leftist attack on Eric Cantor's office.
Well, look at history. Look at all the great conservatives that were killed by liberals, like Martin Luther King and Gandhi and Malcolm X and Edgar Everest, John Lennon and Jesus.
Right.
The status quo is always being attacked by those progressives.
I know. And well-armed
progressives. Those guys didn't want to change anything. Anwar Sadat, Itzhak Rabin.
Look, the dangers of progressive nutcases with guns, we've talked about it till we're blue in the face. I mean, that's why the right is screaming for gun control.
That's why
right
Eric
now.
Cantor's fought so hard for background checks. When I first heard, before I knew that he was completely lying, when I first heard him say that someone shot through his window, I thought, all right, there's two ways this can go.
Mm-hmm.
One is it was a progressive who was furious about health care reform passing. I mean, that's the only option, right? It's either a Democrat who's so angry they won,
right?
They're going to take it out on you, or it's a gay love triangle. And I'm choosing to believe it's a gay love triangle.
You may be onto something.
I think someone's been doing some teabagging of his own.
He does have that kind of
know, a bit of a something where he's going to have to come out and deny something.
He doesn't exactly have the Virginia accent my relatives have. He has that sort of
Pat Robertson.
That Jewish Pat Robertson inflection there.
It's because I'm Jewish, because the left hates the Jews. Wait a minute.
Hates the Jews. Now, if you'll excuse me, I've got teabagging to do.
I've got to hang out with these people who, if they knew I was Jewish, would spit on me as fast as they spit on the other people.
During Obama's State of the Union, Eric Cantor was on his BlackBerry the whole time, texting during it.
Right, exactly.
Like, OMG, I'm not even attracted to black guys as friends. This guy's got me going crazy.
Right. Yeah, it's pretty stunning. So
I'm starting the Eric Cantor's gay rumor.
I think he's beat you to it.
Well.
But, again, I think you'd be happier if he just came out. I think one of the issues we have is when people have to stuff who they are, it makes them crazy.
Then I'll rephrase. He's not gay. He's full of shame because he's into guys on the down low.
Yes.
I don't think there's anything gay about it. But Mitt Romney has.
Right. Well,
that's why they call him Catcher's Mitt.
Yeah? Wow. All right. And, well, he and Rove need to hook up then. And, well, that's another conversation. Look at all the rumors we're starting. We're going to take a break. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. We're going to get some calls right after the break. I'm in studio, luckily, with John Fugelsang today for the Fridays with Fugelsang. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in.
What a man.
On the Stephanie Miller Show.
There's something wrong with us. Something very, very wrong with us.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks in studio today with Fridays with Fugelsang. I'm going to pronounce it into proper.
Ah, please do.
Yes, do.
For you, the war is over.
Right, for you, but not so much for the rest of us.
Why do you fear me?
I don't fear you. I'm just a little, I think there should be a boundary of some sort.
Can we both be like closet gay Nazis smoking our cigarettes?
Well, that's what we're viewed as by Glenn Beck anyway.
I pardon you.
With our bizarre way of poking them.
Oh, no.
Yes, we are.
You're talking about poking again,
we're
huh?
We're poking the people with our socialist ways.
I pardon you. I pardon you.
I pardon myself. Oh. I pardon myself before I came into the studio this morning.
Pardon me, Caroline.
I was pardoning myself like you would not believe. So, seriously, I need to pardon my one more time before we go to break again. But I want to take some more calls because there's wonderful people in this order. Okay, so Shannon in Dallas, Texas. Shannon, how are you? Are you with us? Shannon, do we have you?
The family Von Trapp.
Do we have Shannon? There she is.
Hal.
Hiya.
Honey. It's been a wonderful week. We spent Monday.
I agree.
Yeah.
I would have been happy with just the improvements in student loans and the Pell Grants.
Well,
I really would have been. That would have been a huge step forward.
I agree completely, and I think that it is a huge step forward. I have a question for you, though, because I absolutely love your show.
Thanks.
Love Steph's show.
Yeah.
I've been listening to a bunch of different stuff. I watched Morning Joe this morning, and I listened to some other crazy people talking yesterday. What about this issue on page 114 of the Act that exempts members of Congress from purchasing the public plan? What do you think about that?
Well, that's they're already in an exchange of their own.
Right.
So it's already in place.
Right.
Eventually, though, their families can buy into it. That's not an issue. That doesn't concern me so much because it's essentially the same thing. The thing that concerns me is the establishment of standards and maintain and that they're the same. I don't care if it's a separate program for government employees versus, you know, it's the same way that their internet is firewalled.
Right. Right.
I think by letting them have a different plan, let's draw more attention to that over the next few years. Mm-hmm. I think it's actually a good thing because it'll keep people fired up about this issue.
Right. The truth is all the insurance companies that are available to them will be available in the national exchange anyways.
Right.
And they will want to be part of that because they can, you know, it's a bigger marketplace. It's the same way. This is the equivalent of being allowed to sell your stuff on Amazon as opposed to just having a store. And that's what these guys are really going to go for. And the nice thing is Nancy Pelosi is really trying to cement over the next few months the rules and regulations that are in there that establish the minimum level so that you have to, if you want to participate in the exchange, you have to meet those levels.
Right, I understand, but then why to begin with would you put a provision in if you thought that this was such an excellent plan?
Because this was in the attempt, I think, to get Republican votes, and you know they weren't going anywhere near anything that involves the public. I mean, literally, the word is an anathema to them. In all honesty,
that's an excellent point. It's
to get the votes for the program. If you told senators, there are 10 or 15 Republican senators, the Ron Paul types in some ways, that would go, absolutely, I think we should all have to be on that. And they are only saying that because they know it would scare the other people out of voting for it, mm-hmm. and they can look good.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not. They had no intention whatsoever of actually being involved in that. They could just look good and know that it would never get voted for. So the Democrats removed that as a potentiality.
It's sort of like Democrats, the liberals with the public option.
Right.
In fairness. In fairness, they knew it wasn't going to happen, but
no,
you can keep the base solidified.
I was just going to say, you guys are so smart. It makes me smile.
Oh, good.
Again. Hal, I'm coming to New York tonight. Can we have drinks?
Absolutely. Come down to the Gays of Our Lives events. Gregory Michaels will be in studio with us in the final hour today to talk about the charity event that's going on with all the straight actors playing gay who are getting together to meet with fans and the money goes to
is phenomenal. And again, to commend your performance in past, I think it's amazing that you bring the realization that straight people, gay people, are all concerned about issues of humanity. It
absolutely
doesn't matter.
There's no question. And by the way, the most important thing of all, it's not contagious.
Yes.
You are who you are.
I wish it was.
It would make life easier for a lot of women.
Exactly.
I know that's true. Thank you so much, Shannon.
Great.
Awesome. Thank you.
I did a movie where I played a bi-curious guy, so I'm working the door at this party tonight.
Oh, right, exactly. Yeah. And I'm what I call gay adjacent.
Yes.
That's my term for me, because I'm close enough to appreciate the real estate and get some of the benefits without actually being gay.
I actually call myself a fag stag. Straight man who hangs out with gay men.
There you go.
Yeah, that's my tribe.
And two of my greatest friends beyond Queer as Folk, of my life, that, you know, my best friend growing up and one of my best friends currently, it's funny that I'm the straight guy that they can actually talk to about their relationship issues because of Queer as Folk.
Yeah,
I can go, oh, I hear you, sister. Men are pigs.
I grew up on Long Island working in a regional theater from a very young age, and so by the time I got to high school, the gay kids would come out to me.
Yeah. Right.
It's a beautiful thing. Yeah. I don't understand. Straight men who don't like gay men are missing the point. Fellas, you see two guys holding hands, that's two more girls for you to strike out with.
Right,
celebrate.
Exactly.
Straight men should love gay men.
No question. And
helps you keep the bar low.
And let's talk to Tracy in Binghamton, New York, about Sarah Palin and some of the stuff. Hiya. Tracy, you with us?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right, I got you on speaker, so I don't want to be too loud. But, have you gone and seen her on Facebook, what she has? She has gun crosshairs.
Yeah, mm-hmm. on all the districts. And
yep.
And McCain was on yesterday going, that's ridiculous. I've heard people use that kind of hyperbolic language for decades. And stuff. Like, well, yeah, but this is a different time. And you don't have, at the same time, people packing guns. You don't have a guy holding a sign that says, if Brown can't do it, a Browning can.
Mm-hmm.
And then you attach that. It's as if they don't believe in putting evidence together. Like, they really want to view things as singular in source all the time, never connecting the dots. It's like if they watch CSI, they would go, look, I can watch one break, and that's all I get. If you start putting evidence together, my brain starts to bleed.
And this is how it's always been. It's always the conservative person who kills the agent of change, unless you count Lee Harvey Oswald, and he doesn't exactly count, does he?
Because he didn't actually do it, you mean?
Could be.
I'm going to go with Jesse Ventura on that one.
Yeah,
you're right.
Thank you so much, Tracy. Appreciate the call. We're up against the hard break. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. We'll be back right after this. I'm Hal Sparks with John Fugelsang filling in on the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It does feel good. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph while she's away on vacation. Today I am lucky enough, of course, to have in studio with me the lovely, the talented John Fugelsang. Fridays with Fugelsang is a standard here.
It is. Some call it a standard.
Something that I've never actually been able to participate
I've never been able to live up to one, but I'm proud to be here with Hal Sparks. Hal doesn't really choose to define brilliance, as Hal feels he redefines it with each performance.
Thank you, yes.
And I'm happy to bring you down to my lower standard.
I'm always one downing myself. on the line with us, we have Christian Weller, a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, which is not only sounds important, but actually is. Christian, are you with us?
I'm with you. Thank you very much for having me out. Good morning.
Oh, my pleasure. Absolutely. I mean, there's, it's one of those situations where it's good to have you here, but also there is so much to talk about. This has been, on a legislative level and a financial level, on a, you know, on a governmental program level, a huge week.
It's been a huge week, and we're moving very quickly in the right direction in terms of making sure that American families are economically safe and sound, but also that the economy will grow much faster in the future, in the long run. Right. And the reason why I'm saying this is when you look at the entire economics literature and you dig through all of these incomprehensible articles on investment and growth, the one theme that always comes out is that what businesses dislike more than anything else is uncertainty. And so at this point, you have, with the healthcare reform bill, you have created certainty in two ways. The first one is you have a healthcare reform bill, so there is no more policy uncertainty. It's clear what's coming in the next few years. Mm-hmm. And then the second part is you have more certainty in terms of cost increases. You have mechanisms to reduce these out-of-control cost increases from year to year. One year it goes up, your premiums go up by 3%. Next year they go up by 38%. That's off the table.
Similar in many ways. Similar in many ways to the issue we have with gas prices every year, every
that's
cycle
exact,
when it comes
and
around.
That is something that should come next, or it mm-hmm. should be in the docket to reduce some of the fluctuations we see on the energy side. Again, the entire economics literature is clear on this. Energy price volatility is bad for investment and growth. Right. So I think the healthcare bill is the right step. The financial regulatory reform bill is the right step exactly for the same reason. Everybody mm-hmm. agrees something will come. You have clarity and you have more stability, and in the end, you have a much more saner environment in which you can do businesses, and I think in the end, you're going to have much faster growth, much more investment, and higher living standards because of it.
Well, obviously, everybody can live once if they know what the rules are. You know, that's one of the ones, you know, we've literally in our financial systems, and this is what brought us to the brink, was the fact that it was a Wild West mentality at one point. You had literally the American people, individuals, living by a very strict set of rules of what we're allowed to do and what we're, you know, offered to do, in that, you know, if we, our credit rating, all those kind of things defined very strongly what we were allowed and capable of doing. Whereas you had these huge organizations creating sub-organizations that could make up things out of thin air and loan money that didn't exist and those kind of things, and then bet on that money. It was an absurdity. Once you get some rules in place, even if they're not perfect, at least we've got a structure.
Well, you have a structure, and you also bring back some sort of personal accountability or
right.
professional accountability. I mean,
yes.
That was one of the major underlying issues here. I mean, I teach economics at the University of Massachusetts Boston, and the thing is, like, it's a prime teaching example of what happens if policy holds nobody accountable.
Right.
And everybody can just simply repackage risk, call it something else, slap a new label on it, and ship it off to the Norwegian pension funds. And what you end up with is a system that goes quickly out of control and can bring down the largest economy in the world.
That won't happen, though. I mean, that's absurd. I mean, it's cute. And, I'm sure that's what you teach over there at U of M Boston, you know, which is, we all know, a party school. So they'll just let that float by. Nobody's really paying attention to that. And so coming into this, you know, they tried to attach the and this kind of dovetails into that awkwardly as I can, the fixing of our student loan program. And you literally had Lamar Alexander coming out and saying that now the government wants to take over the federal student loan program.
Well, I mean,
this is
like,
the quote.
You read, I mean, student loans is a prime example where actually conservative and progressive economists agree it's something that the government needs to do. It's not something that the private market creates by itself. It's just simply
right.
because you cannot collateralize somebody's knowledge and brain power. It's just simply impossible, so the government needs to provide subsidies and regulation. And basically, we have had two tracks, the government basically giving the loans directly and having private people, private companies servicing it, or giving subsidies. And the subsidy system is just incredibly broken. It's very costly. And you're now reducing some of these subsidies and basically bringing it back to the government, saving the taxpayers money, making the system saner. But you got to remember, conservative and progressive economists agree, the government needs to do this. And
right.
So it's just a question of how do you do this at the lowest cost of the taxpayers.
Well, precisely. And then going forward, financial reform obviously is going to be the next thing on the table. You had literally a one of the Democratic senators, Kaufman, actually said today that the bank reform that Dodd is putting forth will not end too big to fail, and that's an integral part of anything that has to go forward. Insofar as you know, what do you think will actually get through?
There is systemic risk regulation, which is basically the Dodd bill creates an oversight board that basically looks at the financial system on a regular basis and tries to identify trouble spots and step in. Then there's the consumer regulatory agency that creates a level playing field between the consumers and the banks so that the consumer can't be ripped off on a regular basis. And then there is this too big to fail issue, and that is still controversial, but it is part of the Dodd bill to basically raise money from the biggest banks to create a fund at the Federal Deposit Insurance Commission and corporation, and then say, okay, well, if a bank is just so large, they're in trouble, and we need to let them fail, the FDIC can then step in and has actually the resources to unwind. It's called resolution authority, to unwind that bank. And that has been missing in the piece, that we simply didn't have that authority or the resources, and that's why we ended up with the TARP, the infamous financial bailout that was initiated under the Bush administration. Because this mechanism didn't exist. But it is part of the Dodd bill to really reduce, to basically say, okay, well, you, Citibank or Bank of America or Lehman Brothers or whoever else you are, if you're failing, we're not going to send you money. We're going to take you over, and we're going to chop you up and sell you off in bits and pieces. And that's exactly what the FDIC has done with smaller banks.
And we have enough money. Right, and we have enough money in this this fund created by the largest banks to cover that in the event that it happens, instead of gutting the normal FDIC, which is there for just protecting investors against the random banks going under.
That's correct. And then the other, I mean, some people would like to see actually caps on the size of banks. That will probably be part of the discussions. That's another way of going after the to do big to fail. You just simply say, like, if you're a certain size of a bank, you have to start selling off pieces of your own bank. You cannot be larger than X amount of the financial system.
Right. Christian, one of the knocks against the Democratic administration with the health care reform bill was that they didn't do a good enough job of selling it to mainstream middle-class Americans that this was going to help them. How can they avoid those mistakes with the financial regulatory reform bill? I know it's more of a political question than an economic question, but what does the White House need to do to convince working-class people that this is going to help them? What are the talking points they haven't come up with yet?
Well, I think that they have two talking points in there. The first one is we're going to create a level playing field so the banks can no longer rip you off. So I think the Consumer Protection Agency, which has a new name now, but that's an integral part. You just simply say, like, look, the banks, we're just going to put a stop to this. The bank can't just simply change the rules in their favor on a monthly basis. And the other part is we're going to let big banks fail. Big banks fail if they make mistakes. There's no more bailouts. I mean, I think that's the bumper sticker. No more bailouts.
Do you believe it? Do you think really?
Well, nobody wants bailouts. If you see like what Tom Coburn, the Republican senator, is saying, and you look at where the Democrats are, you have the resolution authority. You're talking about caps. You're talking about what's called the Volcker rule to take off some parts of basically prohibiting big banks who have some access to government money from speculating with that government money. So there's a number of things in it that could really stop the big bailouts. But you know what? We we've never been here before. This is a trial and error period. It's better than what we have right now. It's a lot better than what we have right now. And it will have to be put to the test of time. It's very hard to predict whether that will work, but it will definitely work better than what we have at this point.
For long term, it seems to be the conservative attitude that the White House is taking on. It's, and the essence of what the word conservative really means. I mean, this
right.
is really
I mean, it's
planned
about
American
protecting the system, and it's protecting, it's an action, in fact, actually protecting capitalism from itself. There is actually a book by conservative economists called Protecting Capitalism from Capitalism from Capitalists, and that's exactly what it is. It is really intended here to create a saner system that we no longer go through these enormous roller coaster rides in the economy and Wall Street that we've had the last 10 years, and really kind of have gradual upward movement that creates living standards and protects living standards for years to come. And that's what the healthcare bill and what the regulatory, financial regulatory bill are meant to do. But again, both of them, I mean, it's the same message that you have with healthcare reform at this point emerging from the White House. We're creating a level playing field between consumers and insurance companies. And regulatory reform does that, a level playing field between consumers and the banks. I think that's the primary message that is common to both of those bills. And I think that's the right message. And it's correct, and you can substantiate it. And then the other part is you're really reducing the cost to taxpayers in both systems. I mean, you have healthcare cost control, and on the financial regulatory reform, you have cost control, but basically doing whatever you can to prevent future bailouts.
So I think we've made it sexy.
Right, I think so. But you know, one of the things that Obama and we have to we're coming up against a break. One of the things Obama was pushing early on in the healthcare debate was security and stability. And I think that's probably something we're going to hear. You know, when we go through financial reform as well, is you know. Security and stability.
You do need security and stability as the sine qua non, as the precondition for faster growth and rising living standards. I think that's more the role for the economists, but to explain that the security and stability actually means faster growth and rising living standards in the future.
Fantastic. Christian E. Weller, senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, finding a way to make math sexy.
The private sector can figure it out on their own.
On their own, right?
Associate professor next week.
Yes. Associate professor of public policy at University of Massachusetts Boston and a fantastic asset in times like these. Thank you so much for being with us
today.
Thank
you very much for having me.
Absolutely. 1-800-STEPH12 is our number. I'm Hal Sparks filling in for Steph while she's away. This is our final day in studio. She will be back on Monday. I'm here with John Fugelsang.
Hot.
Call us.
Please.
Join the chat. Livestream.com/Hal Sparks. We got some people on the line already, so we've got a lot of talking to do. It's going to be good. We'll be back right after this.
You'll cheer, you'll cry, you might even get a cheap laugh or two.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. This is our final day in studio. I'm lucky enough to have with me John Fugelsang.
Yes.
We are taking your calls. We were just talking to Christian Weller from Center for American Progress, who actually was able to make math sexy.
How?
Yeah, seriously. Let's go to Jeannie in Ithaca, New York. She wants to talk about health care. Jeannie, are you there?
Yes, I wanted to point out that we can now, we don't have to whisper about the fact that the bill has a provision that allows states to have a public option.
Right.
And that's how it started in Canada.
Yep.
Saskatchewan.
Exactly. So, it also has a provision for national nonprofits. So if a state decides to incorporate its single-payer system and turn it into an available nonprofit for the rest of the country using the same architecture, that state can get the funds from that and put it into its own coffers.
And we can thank Republicans for trying to make us able to buy insurance in other states if it leads to more single-payer spreading.
Exactly. That's the ironic
beautiful
part.
Beautiful thing.
You know, the co-ops in Washington State that are, you know, you got your, like, $10 or less co-pays and the like and really great service, those are all going to be available at some point during in the exchange. Believe me, over the course of fixing this bill, that's one of the things. I think it's an excellent thing that you pointed out. Thank you so much. And let's go to Marina in Ithaca because we're just – apparently you guys need to hang out. Marina, are you there?
Yes, hi. I just wanted to say, first of all, I love your show. You're amazing.
Thanks.
Thanks to you and John. But also, I spent the day yesterday calling the Democratic legislators who were threatened and offering them my support.
Uh-huh.
And I called Piorella's office and I asked how his brother had his propane line cut. I don't
right,
think
at his house.
About that. Yes, and I said, how can I help other than contributing to your campaign? And, you know, I'm not his direct constituent. He said, you know, you could call John Boehner's office and tell him this is unacceptable behavior. So, yeah, so I did, but I learned from Colleen Boehner's office, and I always call him Boehner, but anyway, I learned from Colleen
Boehner. I like calling him Boehner.
It's right. Really Boehner, isn't it? But I called in the past, and if you say you're a Democrat, they will hang up on you. So I said I was a Republican,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, brought my gag reflex up. And
I'm a
said I was displeased with my party, and I wanted civility brought back, and I don't agree with the way we were handling it. He hadn't yet apologized, made that token apology for the violence,
right.
violent threats. And she said, well, if that's how you feel, we don't need you, and hung up on me.
What?
No way.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, we got to start recording calls to John.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Out. We're doing everything right. They're freaking out. They're falling apart.
That's gorgeous.
To offer that.
By the way, the next time you call, mm-hmm. use Skype and record the call.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'll do that.
It's a landline, so you will make that call for free.
Oh.
And you can record your calls on Skype.
Wonderful.
So
thank you, dear.
Yeah, and then you know,
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I got some ex-girlfriends to phone up.
Exactly. So, you know, keep a log of that, because if that's what they're doing, people need to hear that.
Absolutely.
That's the thing. Thank you so much for the call, and I appreciate it. And apparently, you guys should start a group in Ithaca, New York, because
we love you.
like-minded crowd. Thank you so much, Maria. Bye bye.
That's fascinating. You know, because you have to make the Republican folks feel safe.
Yeah.
Do you find this when you're doing stand-up? If you're doing a political set and it's a largely conservative crowd, I find that you can make all the Republican jokes you want. You just have to make fun of the Clintons and Al Gore and Barack Obama and Saddam Hussein, and then you can tell a Bush's dumb joke and the conservative folks will feel safe.
Yeah, I avoid that entirely because I don't make false equivalencies. I hate the idea of parody, that somehow you can equate what Republicans have done to what Democrats done.
I don't even do that.
Yeah.
Would never do that, but just making them feel safe because
right.
they're so afraid to begin with.
See, I don't do it. I double down.
Yeah.
And what I do is I don't attack their politics. I attack their lifestyle. And that is attached to their politics. We got to take a break. We'll be back right after this. I'm Hal Sparks in studio with John Fugelsang. The day is just zipping by. Fantastic chat going on at livestream.com/Hal Sparks or HalSparks.com/livestream. You can also email me there at yinyang@HalSparks.com. And if you go to the site, you'll know why I chose that in particular. We're going to continue this. We're going to take your calls. 1-800-STEF-12 is our number.
We are the scab mooks.
It's true. We are the scab mooks temporarily while they can go away. So it's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks. We'll be back right after this. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks. And this is my band, 01.
Indeed.
Tony always throws in a couple of 01 songs during the week. Yeah, this song's called My Pretty Parasite, and it's actually about a girl I dated in New York. I'm not kidding. And I literally, the guitar solo in it, I'm very proud of. I did with a talk box, you know, the thing that Richie Sambora uses in Living on a Prayer. And the reason I used the talk box is because this girl would talk constantly and say nothing. It was one of the big irritating points, was like, ugh.
Just, really?
I don't mind if you're talking. I like hearing the sound of your voice, and I like your personality, but actually try to have some content. It would be lovely. So that was funny. So that became the storyline with it. Anyways, too much information.
Is she in politics now?
Yeah, actually. She's actually campaigning for McCain today.
Oh, well, there you go.
I kid. She can actually see Russia from her house.
She can see Oblivion from
yabbity,
her house.
Yabbity, yabbity, yabbity. So, yeah, let's touch on that a little bit.
That ex-girlfriend, yeah.
Yeah, Sarah Palin is talk about messing with your exes. Is campaigning for John McCain today.
It would be the gracious thing to do.
Yeah,
since the teabaggers already hate her.
Since he, you know, made a mountain out of that molehill, intellectually speaking.
Yes, of course, we can thank him for that for many years to come.
Right.
Well, I'm glad that Sarah took a break from shooting wolves from her nature show. To go and campaign for McCain. Now, it's the Learning Channel, right? That's where she's going to be carried, her Mark Burnett series?
No, it's the Discovery Channel.
Well, Discovery owns Learning
That's
Channel.
True.
And Learning Channel is going to actually carry her show.
Really?
So
do they have to take the G off and put an apostrophe and spell it
channel.
With a U?
No,
the Learning Channel.
It's now going to be called the You Don't Need to Learn, You Know Everything Channel.
Yeah, right. The stunning part to me is that there's been a lot of bull about how she's going to get $1 million an episode. Have you heard this being floated? The show's budget will be $1 million an episode, which in reality terms is a lot.
Mm-hmm.
She's not getting $1 million an episode.
No.
Not happening.
No. Although we should get reparations for having to hear her voiceovers on it. Because, I mean, if she's really hosting, is she going to host this show, or is she just going to show up in a park and give an intro at the top of each episode?
Yeah, she's going to do a voiceover probably, and they're going to be shots of her standing as, I quit trying to save these forests.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously,
if she wanted to help Alaska, she might have kept her job.
Right.
I mean,
I don't know that's true, though.
Now she's working for the Alaska Board of Tourism or something, or what?
Yeah. Mm. She can better serve the Alaskan people, the people of Alaska and the nature of Alaska if she wasn't in office and she was just an empty suit standing there. Like,
so we should thank her for the show and support this?
No.
No.
No, not at all.
Okay.
I think that would be actually madness. That would be bad. Crazy.
Please watch my show and see the beautiful people of this state that I abandoned.
That I love to shoot. So let's go with I want to take some calls. Let's go to Tim in South Bend, Indiana. Tim, you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi,
Al, John. I don't believe in conspiracy theories for the most part, but
come on.
Well, but I was wondering, maybe the Stupak Amendment and all that went around there was political theater.
Of course it was.
I mean, think about it. Rachel Maddow was right that there never was federal funding for abortions, and yet he's still screaming that there's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Then no doubt they were trying to show. Trying to get the independents to see that, hey, the Democrats are the ones who really care about the unborn.
Well, like I said, you're having an entire conversation, liberal to conservative, on the Democratic side. Without the inclusion of the Republicans, they weren't even necessary to the conversation. If you were pro-life and this was really important to you, you had a Democrat standing up for you during this whole process. And I think you're right in that. I wouldn't rule out that this might have been a masterful move. Like, who's going to play the pro-life Dem
and
stand up and push forward this amendment that really just reaffirms something that's already law as if it's brand new?
Yes, yes. And the truth is, in October, I got a chance to actually go to the White House and also to Congress to go there as a small business owner and rally for health care with a public option.
Uh-huh.
And Joe Donnelly's my representative, and for the first time ever, he told me that, we would have passed health care reform yesterday if it weren't for the abortion issue. And I said, but what about the Hyde Amendment? That's law of the land. And he's like, this supersedes that, the new bill. But then he turned around at the end of the week and still voted for it, because that's, of course, when Stupak initially put the amendment in.
Right.
But that's when I started, red flags were going up, and I think it's because we're in a very conservative area that he's been playing that game.
No question.
And also, he's got to get reelected, too. I mean, a lot of it's Stupak playing to his own base in the home state, but it's kind of fun to see Obama signing an executive order to ban abortions that have already been banned for 30 years.
Exactly.
They're doubly banned now.
Right. They're reaffirming something that didn't need reaffirmation at all, and that they had no intention of not funding and not using. That's the shocking part. And the great thing is, it was brilliant. It was actually brilliant political maneuvering, if that was the case. And the funny thing is, it's an executive order that he signed, which is in no way enforceable. Really. I mean, it's no more enforceable than the fact that the Hyde Amendment, it doesn't add anything. The Hyde Amendment is already there.
Yeah.
It's not a plus on top of it. It's one of those things. But again, this is just an inversion. And thanks a lot for the call. It's an excellent point. This is an inversion, I think, of what the Republicans do all the time, which is create these straw men arguments, that like about late term abortions,
Right.
When they, these partial birth abortions that you always hear about. And the only time those ever happen is when the woman's going to die. But they leave that part conveniently out and make it look like a convenience abortion 6 weeks before the woman's about to.
Exactly. I've carried it this long, but I'm bored.
Yeah, right.
I want to go do a reality show. I'm done with this.
I'm rethinking my whole motherhood thing. Right.
It is worth it to see Bart Stupak is now getting death threats from people who believe all life is sacred.
Yes, pro-life
so lovely,
death threats are one of my favorite things in the political discourse.
Here's the thing, folks. I will get behind you banning all federal funds for abortion because all human life is sacred when you get behind banning all federal funds for executions for the same reason.
Yeah.
Let's not forget my Judeo-Christian friends. Jesus never once mentioned abortion, but he was pretty firmly against the death penalty.
Well, you know, being a recipient of it, I'm sure he was, that's the problem with ultimately with Christianity, is that without the death penalty, they don't have a religion.
Without death penalty, Christ would still be here.
Yeah, exactly.
He didn't say, forgive us our trespasses as we lethally inject those who trespass against us.
Right. Yeah. But at the same time, like I said, if you don't have the death penalty, you don't have Christianity.
Because, I know.
You know, that's the sad part. If he'd have just lived to a ripe old age, it really wouldn't have had the magic.
That's why my religion is irony.
That's right. Let's go to Randall in Buffalo. Randall, how are you?
Hey, good, guys. Always a joy. Stephanie, your voice sounds a little funny today, but, you know. listen, I only heard once yesterday Newt Gingrich totally blaming the Democrats for the violence. Could you guys find that quote? I haven't heard it all afternoon. It wasn't on any shows last night. It wasn't on all morning.
Him at the airport, you mean?
Yeah.
I think we grabbed that, didn't we, Tony? We have the Newt Gingrich thing. If we don't, I'll grab it during the break.
And then I heard, I think it was Cantor on the NPR News Hour last night.
He turned me into a newt.
There he is.
Yeah, he had a two-minute turn to speak, and he said government takeover about 12 or 14 times,
right.
And used all of the bullet points. NPR News Hour last night. It was disgusting. These guys get away with just complete lies.
Yeah, they're making it up as they go along. They find, you know, these Frank Luntz talking points that have been tested, and they just play them out, even mm-hmm. though they are based in total fabrication. They are just literally made up out of thin air. The funny part is that if this was a government takeover of the health care industry, liberals would be a lot more happy.
Yes,
quite
liberals
frankly.
Would be delighted about it.
Thanks for the call, by the way. They'd be dancing in the streets, the idea of that. That's not what this is.
In fairness, Gingrich is also kind of celebrating because Texas removed Thomas Jefferson from textbooks and put him in them.
Right. That's true.
Which is a good thing, because the Contract America worked out great, didn't it, folks?
Totally.
Oh.
I mean, it's certainly better than anything that Thomas Jefferson ever wrote.
You know, all those term limits.
Jefferson ever write that we use as Americans?
Please, I don't even know. I don't even know what
Could
he did.
Could he write? I think he was German or something. French. He hung out in France a
he
lot.
Was off, yeah, Monticello? Maybe
yeah.
He was Italian.
Seriously.
No.
And he slept with a black lady. I mean, he's totally not to be trusted.
No, I don't trust him at all. And you know what? Gingrich is the guy who brought us term limits, because now every congressman leaves voluntarily when their two terms are up.
Yes,
we're happy that
exactly.
worked out. And, of course, the Contract for America saved the economy, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And thank God saved it from the ridiculous things that Clinton created. What were they?
Surplus?
Something like that. Anyway, it's just stupid.
If I was Gingrich and if my adultery made Tiger Woods look like an amateur. You know, Tiger Woods cheated on one wife, folks.
Yeah.
Only one.
Right. And he didn't dump her immediately when she was ill to go on to the next one.
Yes. He didn't show up at her hospital room
after
post-surgery to negotiate the divorce settlement.
You know, I made this case on Jay Baer the other night, but I think, you know, the more women that show up that Tiger has slept with, the more he can actually use the I'm sick kind of defense.
Mm-hmm.
Because now it's about volume. You're like, you know, when you've been sleeping with three different people, they're like, oh, I think you're having an affair with a couple of those people. I think there might be something emotional going on. When you get up into your double digits, your triple digits,
mm-hmm.
people are going to go, oh, I see. This is a compulsion. Okay,
yeah, at least Gingrich cheated on his wife with the next wife.
Yeah, exactly.
That's more wholesome. We appreciate that.
It's the, serial monogamous monkey branching, where you never let go of the last branch until you get a hold of the next one.
That's why we're so proud to have him in the Catholic
so
Church now.
So proud that he's a Catholic. He really is, you know, what Glenn Beck is to Mormons, Newt Gingrich is to Catholics.
He's the most recent addition to the Catholic faith, and we're so glad to have another pro-war, pro-death penalty,
right.
anti-helping the poor Catholic.
Because there aren't
enough creeps in our church.
Yeah, exactly, especially lately. Should
mm-hmm.
we talk about that after the break?
I think we can get to that.
I think so. I think we got to take a break. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. We'll be getting to your calls. And, of course, you can join us in the chat room, livestream.com/HalSparks. We got almost 500 people in there today.
Damn.
You're very popular. You've jacked it up. I mean,
that's
people,
me?
Yeah, I think that's you're putting us over the end.
Evil army of the nights and your evil army of the night.
Exactly. An amazing group in there. And you guys talking amongst yourself is a beautiful thing to see as well. 1-800-STEP-12, I'm Hal Sparks, filling in on The Stephanie Miller Show.
And we'll be right back.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show.
We'll be right back.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, in today with John Fugelsang, who just stepped out for a moment, but that's because we are trying to go to straight to audio of the president, who is speaking now live.
It puts in place a strong and effective verification regime, and it maintains the flexibility that we need to protect and advance our national security and
speaking to guarantee about the treaty between
our
US
unwavering
and Russia.
Commitment to the security of our allies. With this agreement, the United States and Russia, the two largest nuclear powers in the world, also send a clear signal that we intend to lead by upholding our own commitments under the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty. We strengthen our global efforts to stop the spread of these weapons and to ensure that other nations meet their own responsibilities. I'm pleased that almost 1 year to the day after my last trip to Prague, the Czech Republic, a close friend and ally of the United States, has agreed to host President Medvedev and me on April 8th as we sign this historic treaty. The following week, I look forward to hosting leaders from over 40 nations here in Washington as we convene a summit to address how we can secure vulnerable nuclear materials so that they never fall into the hands of terrorists. And later this spring, the world will come together in New York to discuss how we can build on this progress and continue to strengthen the global nonproliferation regime. Through all these efforts, cooperation between the United States and Russia will be essential. I want to thank President Medvedev for his personal and sustained leadership as we worked through this agreement. We've had the opportunity to meet many times over the last year, and we both agree that we can serve the interests of our people through close cooperation. I also want to thank my national security team, who did so much work to make this day possible. That includes the leaders with me here today, Secretary Clinton, Secretary Gates, and Admiral Mullen. And it includes a tireless negotiating team. It took patience, it took perseverance, but we never gave up. And as a result, the United States will be more secure and the American people will be safer. Finally, I look forward to continuing to work closely with Congress in the months ahead. There's a long tradition of bipartisan leadership on arms control. Presidents of both parties have recognized the necessity of securing and reducing these weapons. Statesmen like George Shultz, Sam Nunn, Henry Kissinger, and Bill Perry have been outspoken in their support of more assertive action. Earlier this week, I met with my friends John Kerry and Dick Lugar to discuss this treaty, and throughout the morning, my administration will be consulting senators. My administration will be consulting senators from both parties as we prepare for what I hope will be a strong bipartisan support to ratify the new START treaty. With that, I'm going to leave you in the able hands of my Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, as well as Secretary of Defense Gates and Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman Mike Mullen. So I want to thank all of you for your attention. Hillary?
You need a round come up in the conversation, sir.
Well, thank you all very much. This is a good day for America and our security. And as President Obama just reiterated, it is one of the highest priorities of the Obama administration to pursue an agenda to reduce the threat posed by the deadliest weapons the world has ever known. President Obama set that forth in his speech at Prague last year, and today he and President Medvedev reached an agreement to make significant and verifiable reductions in our nuclear arsenals. Long after the Cold War's end, the United States and Russia still possess more than 90% of the world's nuclear weapons. We do not need such large arsenals to protect our nation and our allies against the two greatest dangers we face today, nuclear proliferation and terrorism. This treaty represents a significant step forward in our cooperation with Russia. We were committed from the beginning to reset the U.S.-Russia relationship because we saw it as essential to making progress on our top priorities, from counterterrorism to nuclear security and nonproliferation. Now, we will continue to have disagreements with our Russian friends, but this treaty is an example of deep and substantive cooperation on a matter of vital importance. And more broadly, it shows that patient, principled diplomacy can advance our national interests by producing real results. In this case, results that are good for us, good for Russia, and good for global security and stability. The treaty also shows the world, particularly states like Iran and North Korea, that one of our top priorities is to strengthen the global nonproliferation regime and keep nuclear materials out of the wrong hands. The New START treaty demonstrates our commitment to making progress toward disarmament under the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, the so-called NPT. So as we uphold our commitments and strengthen the NPT, we can hold others accountable to do the same. I know that Secretary Gates and Admiral Mullen will say more about the details of the treaty, but I want to make clear that we have adhered to the Russian proverb that President Reagan frequently employed, trust but verify. Verification provides the transparency and builds the trust needed to reduce the chance for misunderstandings and miscalculations. President Obama insisted on a whole-of-government effort to reach this result, and that's exactly what this was. He and President Medvedev met several times and spoke often by phone. Secretary Gates, Admiral Mullen, General Jones worked closely with their Russian counterparts. Foreign Minister Lavrov and I met in person, most recently last week in Moscow, and we spoke on the phone too many times to count. Assistant Secretary Rose Gottemuller worked tirelessly in Geneva for many months as our chief negotiator. Undersecretary Alan Tauscher, who's here with us, joined her at a crucial time to help complete the agreement, assisted very ably by our State Department expert team, including Jim Timby. Teams of people at the State Department, the White House, DOD, elsewhere worked tirelessly to make this happen. Let me conclude by saying that I look forward to working with my former colleagues in the Senate. They will be our partners in this enterprise. I know President Obama had an excellent meeting, as he reported to you, with both Senators Kerry and Lugar. And Rose, Ellen, and General Jones and others of us have briefed members along the way. I look forward to working toward ratification to bring this treaty into force. Now it's my great pleasure and honor to turn the podium over to my friend, Secretary Bob Gates.
So we got to take a break in a minute. That's the announcement of the biggest treaty in 20 years on nuclear anti-proliferation.
Very exciting. I want to remind Republicans, we'll still have a smaller nuclear arsenal, but it will still be bigger than the Russians.
That's
and
true.
Thicker.
Yes, wider.
Yes.
And at the base and at the top.
Yeah.
That's
and you know how to use your nukes better, too.
Absolutely. No, yeah. No question. It's not the motion in the ocean. It's how much you can irradiate all the contents of it.
I'm glad you put it that way.
Yeah. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. We'll be back right after the top of the hour. Next hour, we've got Gregory Michaels from the hit show Greek. And, of course, we have John Fugelsang following through with us. I want to, before we go, bring up kind of some of the details of this, because this is obviously Robert Gates is speaking right now. Mullen will be there right now. We don't have enough time to kind of go to them. But this is FinancialTimes.com released this morning before the they were going to bring up before this actual announcement was going to be made. A landmark U.S.-Russian nuclear deal is due to be formally unveiled as early as Friday today. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In the clearest sign yet that Barack Obama is in the cusp of what would be his most important foreign policy success to date. This is their biggest foreign policy achievement so far. Obama has managed to deliver something of significance that he himself has said is a top priority in foreign policy. This is a huge, huge day.
Made your life safer, made the world safer, less loose Russian nukes.
Yep, and cost you nothing. As a matter of fact, it's going to save you money, and we'll tell you about how.
Spin it, Beck.
Yeah, right after we come back. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. I'm Hal Sparks with John Fugelsang. We're filling in on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's The Stephanie Miller Show.
Good morning and welcome back to The Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks filling in. This is the final hour of my final day in this week of filling in for Steph while she's been away on vacation.
Oh, now I'm getting all weepy.
I know. It's been amazing. It's been, I have to say, it's been a great time. And the chat room we've had going on at livestream.com/HalSparks, you guys over there have been terrific. Not only have you been having a great conversation amongst yourself, but you've actually helped me a lot during the show this week and been great additions to the conversation. So I thank you for that. Right now, I do want to play a little bit back of remarks made just a few moments ago by the president about a new deal between the U.S. and Russia, a new treaty, basically a reaffirmation and a movement forward on a START treaty. Let's play that right now, Tony.
I just concluded a productive phone call with President Medvedev, and I'm pleased to announce that after a year of intense negotiations, the United States and Russia have agreed to the most comprehensive arms control agreement in nearly two decades. Since taking office, one of my highest priorities has been addressing the threat posed by nuclear weapons to the American people. And that's why last April in Prague, I stated America's intention to pursue the peace and security of a world without nuclear weapons, a goal that's been embraced by presidents like John F. Kennedy and Ronald Reagan. While this aspiration will not be reached in the near future, I put forward a comprehensive agenda to pursue it, to stop the spread of these weapons, to secure vulnerable nuclear materials from terrorists, and to reduce nuclear arsenals. A fundamental part of that effort was the negotiation of a new strategic arms reduction treaty with Russia. Furthermore, since I took office, I've been committed to a reset of our relationship with Russia. When the United States and Russia can cooperate effectively, it advances the mutual interests of our two nations and the security and prosperity of the wider world. We've so far already worked together on Afghanistan. We've coordinated our economic efforts through the G20. We are working together to pressure Iran to meet its international obligations. And today, we have reached agreement on one of my administration's top national security priorities, a pivotal new arms control agreement. In many ways, nuclear weapons represent both the darkest days of the Cold War and the most troubling threats of our time. Today, we've taken another step forward in leaving behind the legacy of the 20th century while building a more secure future for our children. We've turned towards...
Yeah, so that brings us back to where we were when we kind of broke in with the president live. A fantastic...
He's making us all less safe by reducing nuclear weapons.
Don't.
I'm just so outraged at
I
this.
Know. It's horrifying that we might actually have a world that isn't constantly on the brink of accidental nuclear destruction. By the way, I have to do this because if I don't, Tony will kill me. This hour of the Stephanie Miller Show brought to you by Mini Cooper.
Mini Cooper.
Yes. Now get 1.9% APR financing on all 2010 Mini Cooper models. For details, visit miniusa.com/info. And thank you for everybody in the chat room for reminding me to do my commercial, because I always forget. on the line, by the way, let me see if I can get our line back up, is Vanessa Cardenas, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Thank you. From the Center for American Progress, Progress 2050. Are you with us, Vanessa?
Yes, I am. How are
Thank you? I'm great. Thank you for being patient. Obviously, the president's just making remarks on kind of an extraordinary piece of legislation.
Sure.
But I wanted you on because we were going to talk about immigration reform. Now, this weekend, huge, I won't even call it protest. I'll call it a rally about immigration reform in the Capitol.
Yeah.
Tens of thousands of people, almost no coverage whatsoever.
Yes.
By the mainstream media.
That's right. We had over 200,000 people out here in D.C., which was a very amazing sight.
Mm-hmm.
We had almost over 1,000 buses that came from all over the nation, representing almost 40 states, and people convened and came together to send a message that, you know, we want immigration reform next. Obviously, it was an amazing day, but of course, at the same time, Congress was debating health care, so all the attention was on health care. But I think at the same time, it gave a good segue into, you know, what other issues should be taken up next. And I think those of us who are working on this issue for a long time, we feel that it's time for our country to really address the question of immigration reform.
Right. So going forward, what do you think are the major steps necessary to do this? Because this has been a hot button issue for a long time. It's been very difficult to deal with, I won't say that. I will say it's been poorly dealt with so far.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think it's as difficult as it has been made out to be. But going forward, what's the agenda, and what do you think is the best way moving forward that kind of works for, you know, if not all parties involved, most parties involved, and really can make a shift in sort of a stuck policy we've had?
Yes. I think the first thing is that we need to see a bill in the Senate. I think the message last Sunday was, you know, we really need to see Senator Schumer, who's leading the charge in the Senate, to really start. And, we want to see some paper. We want to see a bill. Senator Schumer and Senator Graham published an op-ed, I think, a week and a half ago on the Post, mm-hmm. and pretty much sort of outlined their idea of what immigration reform would look like. And the President Obama also reacted to that outline, calling it, you know, praise it and saying that it was a good place to start and so on and so forth. So I think at this point what we need to see is a bill in the Senate, and we also need, of course, to see some Republicans stepping up, which I think is going to be a challenge, but we understand that immigration reform has to be bipartisan. We need some courage from both parties because we cannot put this issue off any longer. It's important for our country. You know, every day I'm sure you hear about I know we hear about the stories of families being separated. And also the fact is that we really, you know, the other side does not have a solution. You know, their only solution is just enforcement, and that's not a long-term solution.
Right.
And that really just goes to affecting not only the immigrants themselves, but also all the communities that are having to deal with all the side effects of our broken immigration system.
At this point, you know, obviously, you know, Obama's a big fan, and I like his method of government, where he's basically going, okay, number one, we need to do this. Number two, this
uh-huh.
would be important. Number three, here's, and that's really where I think the breakdown. Like right now, I agree that a Senate bill has to happen, and I certainly think that's where the legislative process will begin. You know, and I'm sure the House has tried to push through several bills dealing with at least elements of this that have been rebutted by the Senate. There's, you know, in the 290 that have been shoved up the hill, I'm guessing a few of them had to deal with some of these issues at the very least. But strategically, you know, how do we message this to the American people? How do we let people know that these are Americans mm-hmm. who've been here a while
and are contributing to our economy?
Who have to live kind of off the grid because mm-hmm. of this artificial sense of this mix of xenophobia and fear of job loss to jobs that are actually already being worked by migrant and immigrant workers who have been here for decades in some cases.
Yeah.
How do you start messaging that?
You know, I think one of the first things is that, you know, we really have to start looking at the facts. And there mm-hmm. have been so many studies in the last year or so, and even before then, that just talked about the economic benefits of immigration reform.
Mm-hmm.
You know, CAP, Center for American Progress, just published a report a few months ago that it would actually contribute $1.5 trillion to the GDP over
mm-hmm.
10 years. You know, that's what immigration reform would bring to the economy. The Economic Policy Institute also came out with a report in February, I think, that said that immigration reform would actually contribute to increasing the wages of American workers by like 0.4%.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of like at the macro level, but also talking about, you know, the local level, you know, all the taxes that, you know, people contribute, you know, that the fact that we will make sure that the people that are here undocumented would pay their taxes, mm-hmm. and, you know, the fact that they consume things, you know, they buy things and they're opening businesses. It just makes economic sense. And I think that's really an important message that the American public needs to understand. And also the other pieces, you know, it's like what you said, there are industries in the United States that are really relying on the backs of the undocumented. You know, the farm workers, over 70% of them are undocumented. Those are the people that, you know, pick up tomatoes and lettuces that we go to the supermarkets and buy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the hotel industry, the construction industry, and I can go on and on. And the fact is, you know, that our nation, Americans are becoming more educated, and not many of us are looking to be busboys or, you know, or maids
right.
in the hotels. And that's not to say that that's the only reason why we should have immigrants, but I think, you know, it's a way for us to really advance ourselves and also help others you know, have a better life, because that's why they're here.
Right.
Exactly.
Well, clearly, you know, again, most of the time with the people who are complaining about the jobs being stolen by immigrants are not fighting to get the jobs that are actually taken by immigrants in any stretch. And oftentimes when they're complaining about them, they are talking about, the farm workers and construction, whereas, you know, there's arguably more damage done through soft immigration policy of computer programmers and mm-hmm. middle management executives. That never gets talked about and gets mucked up in the process. I think this is going to be, in many ways, some people will say healthcare, now that it's behind us, we are into the tweaking of healthcare. Financial reform, I think there's enough people on either side of it, but I think immigration reform will be the next civil rights fight of our time.
How can people help who really care, besides giving copies of the Bible to your anti-immigration loved ones so they can read Jesus' words, how can regular people help this cause?
That's a great question. I think, you know, we need to hear from those Americans that support immigration reform. You know, we have poll after poll that shows that most Americans support a tough but fair path to legalization. That means, you know, they support a program that would put the undocumented on a legal path to status, but at the same time require them to pay taxes, you know, make sure that they have not been involved with the law, that, you know, that they demonstrate good moral character, that they're learning English, etc. Most Americans support that. But I think it's important that Congress hears from average Americans about the importance of dealing with this issue. Those of us who are engaged in this, you know, we go there, but, you know, it needs to stop being seen as a Latino or Mexican issue. And actually, one of the things that at the march that was really amazing was to see the diversity. I mean, we had people from the Asian community, from the African American community, from the African community, and we had, you know, leaders from faith groups, from labor, which is another important point, that most of the you know, labor unions are supporting of immigration reform. And it's important to, you know, to make the point that those people that argue about the American worker, they should be fighting for to make sure that American workers get paid well. You know what I mean? They
Absolutely.
Should be fighting for labor rights of American workers and all workers if they really cared about American workers. But my thing is, like, they just want to blame immigrants for taking the jobs, but if they really would care about workers in general, they will be advocating so that all workers have labor rights.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, and we know they can't actually do that. Vanessa Cardenas, thank you so much for being here. Director of Progress 2050 from the Center for American Progress. Of course, you can go to AmericanProgress.org, and she's listed under experts, as she should be. Thank you so much for helping us talk through this. Obviously, over the next 8 to 15 months, this is going to be one of the key issues until we get some headway on this. And I, after what I've seen in the last couple of weeks from this president, I would not expect anything less than we hit this head on very soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Don't forget, white people, the original illegal aliens.
Right, exactly. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. We got to take a break really quick. I'm Hal Sparks filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation in studio with John Fugelsang. Coming up in a little bit, we've got Gregory Michaels from the Series Greek. And, of course, more to talk about in the fact that Russia has just now partnered with us in sanctions against Iran and in cleaning up loose nukes. Go figure. Dang. Real diplomacy actually happening on Obama's watch. We'll be right back after this.
Holy cow! You just blew my mind!
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation in my last break of the week.
I know.
We got a half hour left in the show, and parting is such sweet sorrow. I will be streaming live from the Gaze of Our Lives event tomorrow on my regular cam show, the Hal Sparks Hot and Sexy Cam Show. That I do on livestream.com. And, of course, many of you know that because you are in our chat room with us right now. We got 511 people chatting in there right now, having an amazing conversation amongst themselves. Very proud. I can't tell you how much it warms my heart to see an actual – it's, you know, John was mentioning earlier that they actually can spell.
Yes, I'm not used to that.
That is strange in a chat circumstance.
I'm used to Twitter where people have where it's a sign of
a limit.
Your prowess to not use spell check.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
But we still love the radio audience as well. The core audience of Steph's and the extended MOOC family, we love them too.
Yes, of course. And if you follow any kind of the Twitter hashtag type of things, oftentimes you'll find that those areas of Twitter are like the area for Twitter for people who are too stupid to text. Mm-hmm. You know, that's,
yeah.
that's a dangerous zone to be in. In studio with us, we have Gregory Michael, who is with us today. Fantastic. Started his career. I mean, we'll go way back. The boy was used to dress up in characters at Disney World. I think it was a Disney World or Land.
Disney World.
Yeah, exactly. And that reminds me, you gotta turn your mic on so they can actually hear you.
Yeah,
I gotta do real radio stuff. As the World Turns, Dante's Cove.
Yep.
Now, of course, on Greek. And what brings you to New York? I will pretend
I'm
not to know.
I'm here for the GOOL, the Gaze of Our Lives event.
Yes.
Hosted by in studio, Hal Sparks.
Yeah, it's true. Yes, I will be doing events this weekend, panels, talking to straight actors who play gay and vice versa, I suppose. All for charity and a fantastic thing. Although I think this event, as good as it is, has been name challenged on two fronts. One, it's Gaze of Our Lives, which spells ghoul, which is not particularly good. And their Twitter name is Gaze in New York 2010. But since it's all run together, it looks like gay. It looks like Gay Sin New York 2010.
It does.
Yeah.
Gay Sin.
I want to go to that convention.
Yeah. And I told Shirley, who was one of the organizers, that she looked at it and she went, oh, my gosh. I didn't realize. We can't change it. I'm like, don't worry about it. I'm probably the only person who noticed, except me and all the right-wing freakazoids who hate us. So, fantastic to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah. And your sister just had a baby. That's why you were late.
She just had a baby. I was late. Yeah, late coming to the studio. But she had a baby yesterday. It's like an ongoing process when you have a kid, I think. You know, I haven't had one. One day maybe we'll see. But this is the closest I'll probably be for a while.
So
I'm a new uncle. Yes, thanks.
Yeah, you're going to get plenty of offers in the actual chat room. So
I'm taking it.
Yeah, right.
If you want to conceive before the broadcast is done, we could arrange that.
Exactly. And we will actually take some of not only your calls, but also, any questions you have in the chat room for Gregory. Now, this is an interesting thing, and this, you know, I think don't ask, don't tell is, you know, the rules were just shifted in the last 24 hours to the president is waiting for Congress to actually act on it. They passed a bill through the House, is working its way up. It's now got to go to the Senate once it's voted on there. That's the only way to actually overturn Don't Ask, Don't Tell. In the interim,
actually, it's not. I mean, the executive order could still do it.
But that could also be returned over, and it will also take the pressure off of Congress. If they think there's an executive order, it gives them more excuses to sit on their hands, and I think that's his biggest concern. And I think it's a legitimate one. Mm-hmm. We've got to take a break right now. We're going to finish this hour out with the lovely and talented Gregory Michael, and, of course, the brilliant John Fugelsang, and myself just pinch-hitting. 1-800 Step 12 is our number. We'll be back right after this. I'm Hal Sparks. This is the Stephanie Miller Show. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. We're back. We're having so much of a party here. It's really hard to, you know, do real radio stuff.
I'm so excited, and it's getting increasingly hard to hide it.
It is. Totally. These jeans used to fit so much better. It's 34 minutes after the hour. We're on our last break going, and I'm literally...
I know. Oh, you'll be back.
I know. Well, it's every Wednesday, Hump Days with Hal, of course.
Of course.
Which is a great time. And then Fridays with Fugelsang.
It's great having you in the studio, though. I'm used to being here with Steph all the time. And, you know, the CK1 kind of fogs up the windows.
It does. It can be a little
I love
rough.
The girl. I love
and,
her. But
and the dog hair is just kind of...
The dog hair, and you're tripping over the wine boxes when you come in.
It's nuts or whatever.
Whipping canisters all over the floor.
With me, it's just the gauntlet of strippers in the hallway that you have to walk through and they...
Well, I have to kick those out of my place to leave in the morning.
I know,
so
I appreciate
you
for letting them come over here every day.
Your groupies are much hotter than my groupies wear moo-moos, it's sad.
That's true.
Let's talk about a man with some real groupies.
Yes, Marlon Brando really did love you. I'm just going to say that. And speaking of someone that Marlon Brando would
I'd
love,
never do this for
Gregory Michael.
This.
I would love him back.
This is fantastic. We've got a young actor here who's not only started out.
Started him? Out on As the World Turns was your...
I was a serial date raper.
Wow.
I raped 4 underage girls.
Wow.
And they really were underage. These actresses were, you know, about 16, 15, 16 years old.
Wow. Wow.
That was very rough, guys.
And how? And here's the thing. When you have fans who like your work at that point, how do you take that? You know what I mean? Like, hey, I love your work. I don't. So,
I
mean, I'm doing a good job, but at being a bad person. So, if you like me, I'm really confused.
It was very confusing. I remember, grandmothers would come up to me and be like, "Get away from my granddaughter!" And, you know, think that I was really that person.
Mm-hmm. It's right. A shame how negatively soap operas portray date rapists, I got to say.
Sad, yeah.
So it's a must shame. Have been tough.
Well, I have my issue with that word anyways, because I've said this in my stand-up, but once the raping starts, date's over. You know, the word date rape is such a soft colloquialism for what it really is. It's just rape.
Yeah, it's pretty much rape.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like saying there's a party murder. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
It was a great party till the machetes came out. And
well, that's
party
why they tried
sucks.
To replace it with acquaintance rape, which just kind of sounds like, oh, well, an acquaintance rape is just
I
a
barely
rapist you haven't got to know yet.
Yeah. Who is this woman?
What does acquaintance rape mean? Do you actually know her name? Or
yeah, acquaintance rape means it's someone that you know, but you're not friends enough to have it be friend rape.
Right.
So. Or date rape. You weren't actually dating. You just kind of saw them in the hallway every so often or whatever. And I suppose it'd be like, I don't know what the court proceeding is like. It's like, can you point out the man who attacked you? I think that's him. I don't see him very often.
But I give props to As the World Turns for creating the character, because I think we need to see more date rape characters, because this problem is so huge in society still to this day, the amount of unreported attacks. That go on, so my hat's off to you.
Right, and somebody's obviously got to portray that part of it. Taking on, it's so many people are so uncomfortable with the idea of actually, the association that goes on when you play a villain of any sort.
I think the villain portrayal as an actor is probably my favorite.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's so much fun.
I think that's true. But you are fairly likable on Greek, I will say.
I am likable on Greek.
Yeah, you're very likable on Greek. You've got a break from it, but you are also playing...
I'm one of those guys in the closet.
Yeah.
Well, not this season. I come out of the closet and, I'm proud of who I am.
Right on.
I dye my hair.
You butched up a little bit. You went, hold on. In the closet, you had frosted blonde tips, and now that you're coming out of the closet, you're dyeing your hair dark. I'm very confused by this. This is exactly opposite.
This is actually real life. This is real Greg. On the show, I'm tipped. I'm blonde.
That's what I mean.
I'm blonde tipped. Yes, you're right.
So you weren't gay then. You were just in a band.
No, exactly.
Right. Now he's like,
it's called,
show me the meaning of being lonely. Greg needs a wind machine so bad half the time. It's true. Fantastic. So, how did you end up at the Gaze of Your Lives event?
Gaze of Our Lives. Working on a show called Dante's Cove, I got to meet some really great people. And, the fandom of this culture is so vast. As you know, it spreads internationally all around the world. Mm-hmm. When they put this on, I guess Dante's Cove is so much of a cult hit.
Well, there's people. It's a sold out event.
Two and two is four.
People from all over the world are coming. There's Canadians coming. People from Germany. Wow. I mean that's international. That's technically international. Mm-hmm. I know that there may even be some Australians there.
Wow.
I will be checking accents at the door to make sure they're not South Africans pretending to be likable.
Yeah. South Africans.
South Africans.
Yeah.
Because how badly they treat their aliens.
No, it was a nice country till those Blicks moved in.
Yeah, right, the Blicks. Fantastic to have you here. Now, tell me about the new season of Greek, where you are in it.
We're actually ending up the end of the season right now. We just got renewed for another season, coming back, shooting in May and coming back in August. And it's exciting. I never thought at 20, almost I'll be 29 soon, that I'm playing a 20-year-old still.
Right.
Well, you're in Hollywood. Yeah, that's how it works.
Hollywood, yeah. Yeah, you think you're almost done with that. But now I get to go back and party some more and be another gay character.
I can't wait for my 40s to play a college student.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, in my first acting job ever, after school special called Frog that I did with Scott Grimes, I was 17 at the time, and I was basically playing a 13-year-old because me at 17 looked like any normal kid at 13. My height and my size or whatever. Like, oh, you look like a 13-year-old jock, and you're almost ready to graduate high school. Thanks. That's great. I appreciate that.
Well, you both look really young. And
that's true.
Thank you. Well, I'm 61, so I appreciate that. Yes, thank you.
I believe that's true. Yes, in dog years.
All the Botox, really.
Right. That's the extent of, what we can do in New York. You want to go to Vegas and L.A., that's where they get the real surgery. But here it's just Botox. They're just comfortable with botulism because it's a way of being rude to your skin.
And actors should paralyze their faces, shouldn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Why not?
I agree.
Brings it out.
If not with drugs, then with other drugs.
Right, exactly. Yeah, either, injecting it over time through your arms or just straight into your forehead.
So you must have a lot of people thrilled at you for bringing this gay character onto a family series.
Yeah, I'm actually really excited about that. ABC Family did a really great job of bringing... you know, the storyline to the forefront of the show. And, you know, at first it was supposed to be just a little kind of stint. It's been like about 20 episodes now, and they really, really, really created it to, you know, it's ABC Family. The 700 Club comes after the Greek show.
Right.
So, mm-hmm. And we all know 700 Club is this ultra... not ultra, but, you know.
No, ultra is a fair word.
Ultra, it's definitely ultra.
It's a conservative Christian.
Pat Robertson married my cousin. You can say ultra.
Okay, all right, there we go. No. So, you know, it's
Joel Osteen is a conservative Christian. Pat Robertson is a neocon psychopath.
Yes.
But you can't say that because we're going to put up a, like.
It's a great show for people who enjoy the Book of Leviticus and Revelations and skip the Gospels.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
So. And, you know, and I like ABC Family's new motto. It's ABC Family, a new kind of family.
Mm. All right.
Nice.
Yeah,
it's true.
More inclusive, more open.
It's actually not really that new. It's just the one that nobody ever talked about before.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, there's a bunch of that going around. I was on Joy Behar on Wednesday, and they had one of the guys from American Family? Yeah. The series Modern Family?
Modern Family.
Thank you. And and Joy was talking to him about how it was a new thing on TV that, you know, his character and his partner, who are gay on the show, were adopting a child. And I was like,
I adopted an HIV child 6 years ago on TV. So you might want to remember that there was the first gay married couple on television.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
You know, and I'm standing backstage going, how do I bring this up and not seem like a jerk?
Right.
Yeah.
But it's nice to, you know, it's the steps forward that we really need to talk about. You know, that stuff's been, you know, is more and more being done.
And we have played gay characters. I mean, gosh, we were on, you know, series years and years ago. Dante's Cove was about six years ago, and Queer as Folk was almost, what, 10 now?
Mm-hmm. Well, it started, It's the 10th year anniversary was December 15th.
These shows have been around for a while, and, you know, even if it takes people saying, oh, my gosh, it's now happening now, and even though we did the work, it's okay.
And I just want to say, y'all are taking roles away from gay actors the same way Mexicans are taking migrant work jobs away from white people.
Right.
It's a disgrace.
That's so what's actually happening.
It really
so
is.
Yes.
Yeah. It, you know, and the interesting part, and that comes up a bunch. Maybe that's, you know, something that you might want to address too, is Greg, is that a lot of times there's this misconception that somehow gay actors came into the roles and straight actors sort of bumped them off because of homophobia in the show. As if you would write a gay character in that was a supportive, important character if that was your intention in the first place, like a torpedoing.
That's an important point,
but the truth is, in a lot of cases, we didn't actually, you know, in Queer as Folk's case, a lot of gay actors weren't coming in.
No, and that's the same with Dante's Cove, and I believe probably with Greek as well. So. Mm-hmm.
And you can't necessarily blame them because it's not like the structure's been set up to protect them. I think the gay actors on Queer as Folk have had a harder time getting work after the show than the straight ones.
Agreed.
Even though we're all playing the same character, this is illusion that somehow they are playing themselves, so it's not really acting.
Well, and I always say this, you know, as soon as all the gay actors that are in the closet give up their straight roles, then I'll take a straight role.
Amen.
So,
I mean,
you know,
it may freak you out, but it's 25 years this year since William Hurt won his Oscar playing a gay character for the first time. And when you look at how far we've come.
And almost the same amount of times when Harry Hamlin lost his career for doing the same thing.
Yeah. Clash of the Titans played a role in that, too.
I don't know.
Harry Hamlin came back and did L.A. Law after he did Making Love.
I know, but it was almost 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, he had no career for 6 years.
And he's a talented talent.
He is, no question. But, he was persona non grata.
Yeah, he took a risk.
So, and it's still a risk to this day, which is the shame.
Well, and also because that wasn't even playing a gay character. He was playing a bi character.
Yes.
And that's even riskier to this day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's, you know.
Not in this room, of course.
That's just greed at that point, you know.
I mean, sorry, the show is called Greek. I thought we could go there.
Right. we can't.
But I love seeing that ABC Family is being a leader with this kind of content. Now, have you had any kind of protest letters to the network from people who don't want their children watching Disney?
Wait, we're going to answer that question after we take a break.
I want
to hear the answer to that question when we come back. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. I'm Hal Sparks. We're going into our last, final 10 minutes of the show. Very exciting. We'll be back right after this break with John Fugelsang, Gregory Michael, and you. That's right, in the chat room at livestream.com/HalSparks. Or on the phone lines with us, 1-800-STEP-12. This is the Stephanie Miller Show.
Are you having a party or something?
Non-stop.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks. That's 01, my band. Covering Shock Me by Kiss.
Very nice.
Yeah,
very nice.
Be playing guitar and singing.
Where can we learn more about Zero One Hal?
At ZeroOneBand.com or ReverbNation.com/01. The word zero, the number one, because that's our street team page where everybody can be involved. And, of course, you can go to HalSparks.com for all your HalSparks needs. And, of course, go to HalSparks.com/livestream. Join in the chat. You can see the beautiful punim of Gregory Michael right now, which is on camera right now. I'm not going to lie. The webcam loves him.
The webcam loves him.
Yeah, it's true.
We're all going Greek here.
It's true.
We're going streaking after the show, guys.
Yeah, after
the,
right.
We're going streaking.
Do they? Every time somebody says the title, do they have to go?
I never thought anybody could forget so much.
On this.
Right? Do they just kind of wink at you and kind of? Yeah. Thank you. That was me destroying my board. I want to take a call really quick because we had talked earlier in the show, and I wanted to get to this person before we got out, about people, you know, calling into their congressperson, you know, and calling into Republicans specifically and getting hung up on, going, well, we don't even need you anyways.
Yeah.
This was what they were literally hearing. And Ben in Rockville, you had a similar situation. Ben, you there?
Yeah, I tried to call into Ms. Ingram today.
Oh, yes.
And try to explain to them why the health care bill will be upheld by the Supreme Court. And not only that, it'll be upheld by at least 7-2, if not 9-0.
Uh-huh.
Like that leftist David Frum said.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, essentially the issue is that it falls under the Commerce Clause.
Right.
It's very, very, it's very, very simple. If it significantly affects interstate commerce, then the Congress has the right to do it. If Congress has the right to institute Medicare or Social Security, tax everybody and provide a specific benefit, then how is providing more choice unconstitutional?
Right, exactly. Especially if it's private choice, where you have the right to do that, or you can buy into a state cop. There's so many areas where, and states can opt out of the mandate, so entire states can go. So there's this idea that somehow states have to sue to get out of
it. I'm not angry about that anymore.
No. Yeah.
I'm over that anger. I've released it.
Yeah.
It's done.
It's sort of absurd. I think it sets them up to make the dumbest argument in the world. I'm beginning to think that this bill is not necessarily about what's in it, but what's not, so that they can make the Republicans look moronic.
And what's so funny is that, you know, I live in Maryland, and the only thing that changed in Maryland from the thing that kicked in immediately was that now kids can be on their parents' insurance until 27.
Right.
Which, you know, everything else Maryland already did.
Yeah, exactly. And so did,
isn't it funny how every state except for Pennsylvania that's filing the lawsuit are all net receivers of federal tax dollars?
By a long shot.
Right.
That's an
so my question is, what gives you the right to complain about federal spending when you don't pay your own bills already?
Exactly. That's an excellent point.
How capitalistic is that?
Exactly.
These guys just spent 8 years spending money.
Call.
These
yeah.
guys spent 8 years spending money like Amy Winehouse in Amsterdam, and now they're upset about spending.
Right. Well, and the
other
thing is
no credibility.
All these states receive more in federal tax dollars than they put out. That's the point he was making, is that you literally have you've got states like California and New York who are putting in, for every dollar they put in, they get back, you know, we get nickels. We actually go in the hole. We actually go, it's $1.50 we put in for everybody else.
If New York City seceded from New York State, the state would collapse.
It would, no question. And so would Kansas, Montana, Iowa.
Newt Gingrich's home county takes in, I believe it was 7 times more than they give out, whereas New York gives out 9 times more than they take in.
Exactly. And so the complaint is that they're going to take my money. They're not taking any of your money. Your money's staying exactly where it is. You're too poor to actually contribute.
Mm-hmm.
That's the funny thing, is like most of the red states don't actually have enough money processing through their entire economy to have any effect on the national economy at all.
Which is why they won't really secede, excuse me.
They're
saying, we got to secede. The only thing the South needs to secede from is high fructose corn syrup, folks, all right?
True.
They're not going to secede from the country. I say if they do, we let them keep NASA and tobacco and enjoy yourselves.
Dude, how much would you like to watch Texas fighting off Mexico without the benefit of the United States Air Force?
Sorry, I forgot the Alamo.
Exactly. It's pretty fascinating. So, I'm going to take one last call. We've got Mandy in Chicago. Mandy, you there?
Yes, I'm here, Hal.
Only got a couple minutes, so real quick.
Okay. I just want to add another dimension to the immigration debate. There's an invisible group of people. I'm a female living with a female. My partner is American. I'm British. I cannot stay. I'm here legally at the moment, but I'm what's lovingly known as a non-resident alien, which makes me sound like the mothership's coming to collect me any minute.
Well, it kind of is. I can tell from your accent that you're clearly from another planet.
I'm doing everything I can to stay in this country legally. I have no recourse left to me in June. My visa is up. We're going for a civil union in Iowa, which is not recognized federally. There are about 35,000 partners of in same-sex couples who are in the same situation we are. I'm working in, legally in a local college for the year, teaching American students English, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. And not that I don't feel for the plight of illegal immigrants here, but it's a big, far bigger debate than that. There's an invisible group of people. I write regularly to the president.
Right.
I'm going to become a student for another year so I can stay here another year, but we are invisible. There is no...
No question.
And people say to us, hey, why don't you just marry a guy? You know what? I have faith and stay here then. I have too much respect for the American people to do that. This country has been very good to me. I refuse to do anything remotely shady, you know, so...
If you change your mind, Jesse James is free now.
Right. Yes, Jesse James. And he doesn't seem to care who he's sleeping with.
If you
with.
Want a fake marriage with a guy, you'll do it. You know, I'm just saying.
You'd never miss him, you know, like, quite frankly.
You know, I don't want gay marriage. I just want, you know, the uniting, necessarily, I just want to be able to be with my partner in the country that she would like to stay in as a citizen.
Unfortunately, in our structure, that's actually required. Thank you so much for the call and an excellent point. I mean, there's an entire subclass of people, you know, there's minority groups of minority groups that that get kind of washed away. And the immigration, our focus is so much on Latino immigrants because of the volume and the specific.
That's not why the focus is on.
Well, that and the color.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, how dare they speak
in the specific
Spanish
states
in California?
In the specific states that they're affecting.
Yes.
You know, believe me, if Mexican immigrants were coming in via Canada into the northern states, there'd be a much more substantive conversation going on.
If the Swedish modeling team has their boat break down off the coast, let freedom ring. Come on
right,
in.
Exactly.
Ring.
Well, that's been an argument for a while. Is you know a line based on ugly. You know, I'm not the first comedian that's floated that concept. Going forward, anyways, I want to wrap the show because we only got a couple of minutes left. Literally, we got 2 minutes to go. So I want to, take this time out. First of all, thanks, Greg,
for being with
us today. Gregory Michaels on
Greek. Tell the kids when Greek is on.
Yeah. Monday nights, 10 p.m. Season finale is next week. It's actually coming up on Monday.
Fantastic. And is the show available on iTunes and
iTunes,
the like?
iTunes, Hulu, and the like, yes.
Fantastic.
Watch us.
And then, of course, the lovely and talented John Fugelsang.
He's so lovely.
@JohnFugelsang on the Twitter.
On the Twitter, johnfugelsang.com, and my new site, ericcantorlookslikeaprisonsnitch.com.
A prison snitch?
I look at him, I see prison snitch. That's all I see with the guy. In the movies?
It rhymes with snitch, but that's not actually the word I was thinking.
I wouldn't. Oliver North can make him his prison bitch.
Look, I have my window was shot. We got 1 minute left. I want to thank Tony, our board op, for getting up at butt in the morning and doing this work. And, of course, Rebecca Baker, who's in with us today, who's doing a fantastic job. And Miranda, who's here all week. And we hope her brother's doing well. He was in a car accident, so she couldn't be with us today. So hopefully she's all right. And, of course, HalSparks.com/livestream. I will be streaming tomorrow from the Gaze of Our Lives event. You can follow me at HalSparks on Twitter. You can go to my Facebook page, and you can also listen to my CD. That's more
Why
of my
not?
Music.
Zero, one,
exactly. Got to wrap it up. Thank you guys so much for a fantastic week. Steph will be back on Monday. Remember, take care of yourselves and take care of somebody else. I'm Hal Sparks. This has been The Stephanie Miller Show.